Hey, welcome to the podcast called
Dogs Are Smarter Than People.
This is a podcast where we talk about writing tips, random weird thoughts to start us off that make no sense to anyone, and
how mean Sean is to Carrie, usually.
Oh no, that's true. So hey, thanks for being here with us.
Yes, thank you very much. We hope you chuckle at least one time.
One time.
Hey, welcome to the podcast, Sean K.
Welcome to you and everybody that might be listening, baby.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello. So lately I've been feeling like a failure, but that's not what this podcast is about. This podcast, Random Thought, is about Sean looking sulky.
I'm not being sulky.
You look sulky.
No.
I didn't say you're being sulky. I said you were looking sulky.
Sorry. For looking sulky.
You're so cute. So, our random thought today is that dozens of hungry raccoons apparently tried to take over a Washington woman's property and maybe succeeded.
Maybe succeeded?
Yes. So, apparently, according to a UPI story by Ben Hooper, this lady found herself, right?
Yeah.
She's been feeding the raccoons for 4 decades, right?
Yeah.
And then on October 3rd, there were 100 animals surrounding her, and she called the sheriff deputy.
Well, that's not an unusual occurrence, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, we down in Fort Lauderdale, we had the same exact thing.
What?
Yeah, there was a park right across the street from the beach. I can't remember the name of it.
No way.
Yeah, and I think it was Sunrise Boulevard, maybe? There was a... Before you went back over the intercoastal heading west, there was a fire station with a parking lot. And people would pull into that parking lot because the fire station lot backed up to the park.
Yeah.
And there was a chain link fence there.
Yeah.
And people would feed the raccoons. And it went on for decades.
No, it did not.
Yes, it did. And it was just like that. It got to the point where once you started feeding them, it's like... Sometimes you literally felt like you had to run. Like they were all around you, crawling up your leg and everything.
No.
I'm not kidding at all. It's they learn. They're not stupid. They're going to go back to where the regular food is. And the more, and then, you know, word's going to spread.
Wow.
So
apparently she ran away in her car after calling the sheriff's department, yeah. I think, which seems smart. Honestly, I would get my car. And, according to the Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife, if these little baby raccoons and the big grown-up raccoons get used to being fed over and over again, they can get cranky.
Oh, yeah.
When they're not fed as expected.
They do get cranky, I'm telling you. They get aggressive. It's. I can only imagine that... How old is this lady?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know, man. I don't think they say. No.
Well, she's been doing it for...
35 years,
yeah. So... You know, she's at least 40.
Yeah.
But, well, it's her home, so. But anyways.
That's amazing.
They have expectations after that long. And there's multiple generations in there. And
just yeah. Like a Shawnee. It has
we used to feed them marshmallows.
No, you did not.
Yeah, we did.
I feel like you shouldn't admit that.
Why?
I don't know. Like, is that criminal?
What would be criminal about that? Maybe, but there was no "don't feed the raccoon." Well, I bet there is a sign on that fence nowadays. But we didn't have to deal with it.
Spoken like a true Florida man.
The firefighters might have to deal with it 24/7, but I don't know. It was just a little substation. I don't even know if it was manned or what.
But. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Don't feed the raccoons.
It was crazy.
For decades.
Like the last time I went there, I really felt... Not scared, but like they were being aggressive.
Do you feel like
I was gonna have to start throwing feet?
Do you feel like that happens with men too? Like, hey, I'm used to getting fed as expected.
Probably not with food, but something else.
Oh man. So, in the regular part of the podcast,
yeah, we're talking about raccoons.
No, sadly, we're talking about some features of top-selling novels, which we've been talking about for a while now, right?
This is our third week, at least, isn't it?
At least. It's a lot. It's a lot. You know, I knew it was going to be a big series, but, yeah. Like, I didn't quite realize it was going to be quite so
Well, you're a pretty good online investigator. So.
I don't know, man.
So, I mean, how many murders have you solved?
82. And they're all
of I don't know why we don't do
all
that
my
podcast.
Own heart. All in my own heart.
Oh my God.
So there's an old NPR article about writing bestsellers that quotes critic Ruth Franklin. And she like she had this overview, right, of yes. American bestsellers. And she said, no.
Possible generalization can be made regarding the 1,150 books that have appeared in the top 10 of the fiction bestseller list since its inception.
So, she's saying there's nothing similar. You know, like, you can't make a generalization.
Oh, yeah.
But in his hit list, right?
Hit list.
I've got a hit list right now, man. Snorted. All right, in his book Hit Lit, which we've been talking about, James W. Hall obviously disagrees, right?
Yeah.
But he didn't look at 1,150 books, all that, like, appeared in the top 10.
Yes.
Forever. He looked at the top 12 or 13 or so grossing books.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
That were written by Americans.
Okay.
Which is different because it's a much smaller sample size, but it's also only the super, super, super multi-million copy sales, right? In the last 100 years ago. And he, like, thinks there's 12 common elements, which we've been talking and going through each, right? And we've been talking about that a lot. And the books he analyzed were...
Oh my God, you can make me list. I was just reading this list. I was counting. No, I'll read them all. I was counting. I think it is just about 12.
Okay.
Count while I read.
I can't count.
Not out loud. Just into yourself.
I can't count in my head.
The books that Hall analyzed were Gone with the Wind, Peyton Place, To Kill a Mockingbird, Valley of the Dolls, The Godfather, The Exorcist, Jaws, The Dead Zone, The Hunt for Red October.
You're doing this a lot.
The Firm. The Bridge, because I know your fingers are slow to come up.
Oh, shoot.
The Bridges of Madison County. And the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, there's 12.
Did you run out of fingers, baby?
I ran out of fingers. I didn't know what to do. So, I wanted to have a moment to regroup from my little baby voice, but also regroup from all those posts, because I found this really old interview with Hall. And Mark Schultz on Publishers Weekly, where Hall talks about the elements he found in those top 12 top-selling books that surprised him.
Yeah.
So, basically, Schultz was like, hey, what surprised you? And Hall was like, well...
One, I didn't expect to find this something we came to call the Golden Country, which is a phrase from Orwell's 1984. Winston, the protagonist, trapped in this dull, empty world, has created in his imagination this endemic, natural, beautiful landscape called the Golden Country. It's his ideal world, and not just in these 12 books, but in all the bestsellers we looked at. There was always an image of a place or a time that's this idealized, Edenic, natural landscape that serves as a reference point for much of the story. Did I say that word right?
Poor girl from New Hampshire, man. I don't know how to say them fancy words.
That can't even be a country song.
I'm a poor girl.
Because you're from the north.
From New Hampshire.
No offense.
I'm a poor girl. Ain't got no pitch. I'm a poor girl. I'm from New Hampshire. And they tell me. Well, my husband tells me.
I'm a witch.
Oh.
That's not what I was going to say.
I know. All right, so we've talked about this, not my singing, but like this whole Golden Country a lot in the last week, and that idealized want of an idealized world or time that we long for, right? And like the characters in our books, they seem to long for it too, right?
Yep.
So in that same interview, Hall says,
but the ingredients themselves remain the same. As Americans, we're really reading and have wanted to read permutations of the same book for the last 100 years and probably into the foreseeable future. You gotta stop laughing at me.
I want to just get all the quotes with like the biggest words in the.
Go ahead. I know big like words.
Really obscure. It's just that when you
come across them.
Obscure big words, right? Like.
Are we gonna talk about pronunciations right now?
No.
Okay.
So anyways, those ingredients, right? Like those permutations of the same book over and over again, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to actually be awesome writing for us Americans to want to read.
I think we've proven that time and time again.
Time and time again. But Grace.
This is a quote. I'm supposed to be reading.
All right, you go.
I was going to let you get through her last name. And you faltered.
She's from New Hampshire.
Grace Metalius, author of Peyton Place, once cracked. If I'm a lousy writer, then a hell of a lot of people have got lousy taste.
Sorry. Sarah Weinman writes,
what Metalius and her kin and bestsellerdom really possess, as Hall explains so well in Hit Lit, is the power to connect with readers through their hearts and guts as much as, if not more, than their minds.
It's about your heart, man.
You know what? I believe that statement 100%. Like what I just read.
Yeah, right.
And I think that, without doing any sort of polling or anything, because I'm not into that for this particular subject, I gotta believe that there's a lot more people that read books because of how they feel in their hearts and guts or souls or whatever you want to call them, more than intellect.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But those are different genres, honestly. So they're people that read things for different reasons read different books, so.
Yeah.
Fiction, we're talking about fiction here, right? So that's a heart and soul type of thing. A gut.
What was your favorite book when you were little?
If your gut clenches, that can be a good or bad. Well, how little?
Like a kid, man.
I don't know. Man, I read a lot of Stephen King when I was a kid. A lot of the books that I really love now, either they weren't out or I just hadn't been exposed to them.
Yeah.
When I was a teenager, I read a lot. Pretty good variety.
I'm trying to find out if your favorite books were books that grasped your heart or something, or like.
Oh, I would say imagination probably more so, but not in the like Peter Pan sort of way.
Yeah, but in the scary horror.
Adventure or scary horror type way, yeah. Dog tip for life.
This week's dog tip for life is very short.
If you sit at your master's knee and beg constantly, they're eventually going to give you a treat.
No, no, it's related to raccoons, right?
Oh, no.
And this week it is, try not to be aggressive when you don't get what you want right away, or else they call the cops on you.
Oh. Trust me, I got a million stories about all that.
Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast. All the podcast notes are on Living Happy on Substack or CarrieJonesBooks.blog. The awesome music was available via the Creative Commons and it's being clipped. There's someone singing outside the window right now.
They're not singing our song.
But that is Broke for Free, and the song is Summer Spliff.
Everybody's favorite.
I wish. I'd probably be less cranky.
Yes, you would be less cranky.